Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Amy Eddings, filling in for Brian Lehrer. We're into the last couple of weeks of Your Anecdotal Census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. We're finishing up with Morris and Union counties and in New Jersey and Putnam and Dutchess counties in New York. 1 hour, four counties, and we want to know what's the biggest change in your neighborhood over the last 10 years. We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. We invite your posts from wherever you are, but we're focusing this week on Morris, Union, and Dutchess and Putnam counties. So if you live in one of those counties, please go to your county's page, write down one big change in your community in the last 10 years, and we will talk about it on the air on Tuesday's show. Join us in creating your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. Go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. 8 years ago, meeting your spouse online seemed a bit taboo, and Facebook was just a yearbook for Ivy Leaguers. Now, 17% of marriages originate online, and people are using the web to hire employees, crash with strangers in foreign countries, and to cope with others about their most intimate, and to help others cope with their most intimate problems. Which begs the question, can our lives be more real online than in real life? Joining us now is Alexandra Samuel, director of the Social and Interactive Media Center at Emily Carr University in Vancouver. She's also a blogger for the Harvard Business Review. She wrote a post last month listing 10 reasons to stop apologizing for your online life. Alexandra, welcome to WNYC.
Great to speak with you.
When you talk about people apologizing for their online lives versus IRL, which is the shorthand people are using across the web for in real life, what are they apologizing for?
Well, I think we've seen, particularly in the past few months with the publication of, for example, the New York Times series on distraction in family life at home with Nicholas Carr's book On the Shallows, there's a bit of a backlash right now against the role that the Internet has played in our lives, in the sense that more and more of us are distracted. Distracted if what you feel we should be paying attention to is what's happening in front of us at a given moment in our physical world. But another way of looking at that is we're paying attention to a different space, a space that didn't exist, as you put it, 10 years ago. And that's a very engaging space. At the same time, the fact that our attention is going to Facebook, going to YouTube, going to our online relationships can be very threatening to institutions, to people who don't spend as much time online. And I think that's why more and more people are feeling both like that apology is expected and maybe they're not ready to give it.
So we're talking about people feeling guilty about checking their BlackBerries all the time, as well as people spending more time socializing, instant messaging, G-chatting, Facebooking, Twittering, the use of the Internet writ large, or just the social media aspects of it?
Well, I think the social media aspect has intensified that sense of distraction, and partly because a lot of people trivialize it, right? They specifically use that phrase, IRL, in real life, to say, you know, our real relationships are what happen offline, what happen face-to-face, and what happens with Facebook doesn't count. And so by trivializing, you know, what happens online, I think we exaggerate the relative importance of our offline lives and make it easy to dismiss what happens online. And yet, you know, those distractions, as you point out, they're not just about social media. A lot of it is, in fact, our work lives, our business emails, things we're trying to write. It's not just, you know, so much social media gossip.
Listeners, what has been your experience? Are you more outgoing online? Do you find it easier to say some things by typing than by speaking? Has this allowed you to have more meaningful interactions with people or more detrimental ones? Or do you find the Internet to be a huge distraction and a black hole, cutting into quality time with family and friends? How many hours can you go before checking your email? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comment to our show page at WNYC.org or to our, yes, Facebook fan page. Alexandra, how big of a difference do you think there is between how people express themselves online versus in real life or rather face-to-face? A recent study from the University of Texas actually found there was very little difference at all, that people represented themselves on Facebook, for example, pretty closely to how others perceive them in real life. Do you agree?
Well, I think that how people represent themselves, you know, obviously is now shown to be fairly accurate. I mean, we tend to focus on these stories of, you know, the married man who passes himself off as single or the woman who pretends to be a man online. And those are very, you know, intriguing and titillating stories. But, the vast majority of people are fairly accurate in how they represent themselves. That's not the same as saying that people express themselves the same online. And I think anyone who's ever received, you know, been part of an email misunderstanding, and that's probably everyone who's ever received an email at this point, you know, we know that expression online can go sideways. It can feel very different. It's easy to misread an email someone else has said and read into it an anger, an intention that wasn't there. And I think also you can see the reverse. People express themselves really freely in a way online that they might not do face-to-face. I had the experience of meeting a colleague a number of years ago, and I said something to her about, oh, you know, because I'd Googled her before I met her. I said something about, oh, it's so cool that you also have this screenwriting career. At the moment, her boss was standing beside her, and he kind of looked at her and he said, you have another career as a screenwriter. And she was horrified. I mean, this was, of course, before everyone had that expectation of being Googled, and I really had outed her as having this other life. But to me, that was actually an example of what the web can do for someone. I mean, here's this woman who's got a kind of button-down civil service job, and yet she has this incredibly creative and fulfilling existence online.
I have to say, as a recipient of comments from listeners, that I find people very freely hostile. They say things to me in email that I don't think they would say to me if they met me at a party and they were commenting on something that I said or did. They'd be a little bit more circumspect or something. There seems to be a we've heard of cyberbullying. People seem to be freer to be more aggressive online, I would say. What tips do you have for making these interactions, soothing these interactions
Sure.
and calming people down?
Well, you know, one of the more interesting conversations that's emerged out of my piece for Harvard Business Review was apropos of a comment just like that. Somebody left a fairly dismissive, kind of hostile comment about how this is, you know, what I was talking about was the problem with the internet and the this move towards people having to do everything under their real names is just going to lead us all down the path of being marketed to all the time. And, you know, as you say, it was kind of a hostile comment. It was not the kind of thing I think somebody would have said to me, you know, face to face, and not in a tone that they would have said it in. And so I actually tried to take my own advice and responded to that by seeking, and this is a little weird, but I did look and find a photograph of the woman who left the comment. And I actually wrote my response while I looked at her picture. And, you know, I was annoyed when I first read it, because who likes to be attacked? And I've tried to develop this thicker skin, but I haven't fully succeeded.
Right.
And yet, when you look at a picture of somebody with her grandchild sitting on her lap, you know, she's just a person. And so writing to her and I literally spoke as I wrote. I spoke to her and then kind of transcribed what I was saying as I looked at her picture. It brought out my sense of humanism and my desire to connect with her as a person. And so instead of getting into that kind of war of words where you are responding to letters on a screen, I really try and see the person behind the email. And I recommend that as a practice to anyone who is in a situation where you have to communicate something difficult online, whether it's difficult because it's confrontational or difficult because it's very emotional. Actually visualizing the person you're communicating with brings the best of our communication skills to the fore.
Alexandra Samuel is director of the Social and Interactive Media Center at Emily Carr University in Vancouver and a blogger for Harvard Business Review. She wrote a post last month listing 10 reasons to stop apologizing for your online life. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And Dan from Bridgewater, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. You know, when I was at Berkeley, I really thought that this calling for meaningful dialogue was going to happen once the technology comes up that could be used for that. But I really see that the computers are a place for monologue, where people become self-appointed authorities and other people feel they have to knock them down, and most people don't even read the blog they're responding to. So the use of these pseudonyms and so on has really changed the original intent, the HNET series, where they demanded that you sign with your real name and academic affiliation and so on. These things have gone by the wayside. Now it's all just get your kicks hitting at somebody and then send it to your friends and say, look what a great time I had chopping this guy up. And now Americans, once again, are just doing vicious things to each other rather than trying to understand each other. And I for somebody from the 60s, this is a very great disappointment.
Dan, thanks for your comments. We also got a comment from Helena on Facebook who wrote, it's the way we live now. The printing press upset people, the radio, TV. Now it's fear of smartphones and Facebook. We are all fine. We will remain fine. Tweet away. In some ways, a response to the Dan from New Jersey about his concerns. Where do you stand, Alexandra, in this tension? Is this just another way in which we're communicating, and what we're finding is our social unease about this? Or are there real differences in what we do online and offline that is sort of coarsening society, dumbing us down?
Well, I think that there is that potential, and there obviously have been real problematic examples online. For example, you know, these horrible stories about teenagers who, you know, in the extreme have been hounded to suicide. But I think that there's the potential for that to be, in a sense, a transitional problem. You know, you look at how we interact as a species, and we have literally thousands and thousands of years of social evolution behind us, figuring out how you navigate the experience of being in a room with other people and who gets to speak next or how we speak to one another. And those norms have evolved and been passed down from generation to generation. Now we're in a situation where we have a medium that enables us to communicate in a way that is completely new, and we have no inheritance to inform how we communicate in that context. And to the extent that those norms are being developed, they're being developed by people who are kind of 17 to 25. And I don't think that, as much as I love my younger friends, I'm not sure that's the stage in life where people have the most wisdom on how to communicate or how to treat other people with respect. And I think what we're going to see is that as we mature as a society into the internet era, the kinds of problems that, you know, we're hearing about and the flaming behaviors will learn to manage. And
Alexandra, I need to leave it there. We're running out of time. Alexandra Samuel is director of the Social and Interactive Media Center at Emily Carr University in Vancouver. Thanks so much for joining us here on The Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you.
Continue to leave your comments about your online life and offline life on our website at WNYC.org. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up after news headlines, a liberal finds he loves his gun. Stay tuned.